recording, and this morning is March 9th, 2019. We are in Deuteronomy 10 and the first nine verses of Deuteronomy 11, and the Haftarah is 1 Kings 8, verse 9 and following. Real quick, what did we just read? What are some highlights?
Says, I'm not telling these to all the people who did not know X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling it to you.
Okay, but the one
I mean, that's what struck me. It is a whole list of what you call the history.
Right, right.
But it's actually, I'm not telling this to your children. I'm telling it to...
I mean, it's kind of saying that they don't know, right?
They don't know. But your eyes have seen every great act of the Lord which you did. So
right.
You, Moses, and the people who did see it are responsible for passing it on to their children.
Right. That's kind of the whole summary of the book of Deuteronomy, I'd say.
Right.
They did not see what he did to you in the desert. But besides that, there's a whole list of things that happened. For example, which was... one of them.
Deuteronomy
10 starts off with carving the tablets. And that's kind of the first
thing. But the new ones in the ark, and they're still there. And then the historical thing.
So, yeah, what does it say about the tablets? There's two of them.
I placed them in the ark.
They're
still there, just as the Lord commanded.
They're in the ark.
And they're written on, and this is the second bunch.
What are they made of?
Stones.
Like the first ones.
Okay, so this is the second batch. Okay, Deuteronomy, as we talked before, is a reiteration of what's happened in Exodus, Numbers. So the first time we see this same story about the two tablets is back in Exodus. Chapter 34. You're welcome to look there. Keep one finger in Deuteronomy 10. Exodus 34 says, chisel out two stone tablets, the Lord said to Moses, like the first ones, and I will write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. Who broke the tablets? Moses. Be ready in the morning and then come up on Mount Sinai. This is a big difference between Exodus and Deuteronomy. What is Exodus calls the Mount Sinai, Deuteronomy calls it what?
Horeb.
He broke about the golden calf, right?
Yes. Verse 4 of Exodus 34. So Moses chiseled out two stone tablets like the first ones, and he went up to Mount Sinai early in the morning as the Lord had commanded him, and he carried the stone tablets in his hands. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name. And then this is that whole section of God announcing his character, who he is, full of compassion. And then Moses says in verse 9, Lord, if I found favor in your eyes, let the Lord go with us. Although this is a stiff-necked people, forgive our wickedness and our sin. And so on. So that's the first account of this. And now Deuteronomy 10 is giving the recount.
It's interesting because I don't think I've noticed before that this is before the golden calf. This is the first, the Exodus account here is number one, the first.
What's before the golden calf?
It's before the golden calf, and he's already calling.
Deuteronomy 10 or Exodus 34?
No, Exodus 34.
It's before?
Isn't it?
I don't think so. The golden calf is in 33, right?
So we're already talking about the second one.
Or Exodus 32.
Okay, so, I'm wrong. So I was going to say what struck me about 34 just now.
Yeah.
was that we're a stiff-necked people. And I think that stiff-necked thing comes very clearly around the whole issue of the golden calf and so on. I haven't seen, and I thought here, this was, you know, Ten Commandments number one.
Right.
And I'm wrong.
So this is the first one. But your point about the stiff-necked people makes me... there seems to be a connection to Deuteronomy 10,
right.
Verse 16. What does it say there? Deuteronomy 10, 16?
Circumcise
the foreskin of your hearts.
And
don't be a stiff-necked. Yeah. So that there's that connection with Exodus 34.
It implies they were stiff-necked, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It says don't be it any longer.
That's right. Okay. Now, back to Deuteronomy 10. We've got the circumcise your hearts and don't be stiff-necked any longer. And what is it? It's interesting here. In Exodus 34, it goes into the character of God. You know, he's all compassionate. What are all the...
You're saying that as if it's like a...
Right. Compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes... This is Exodus 34, 6 and 7. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. Now, you come to Deuteronomy 10, and here in verse 12, it's kind of going into who God is and how you need to love him and serve him and circumcise your hearts and don't be stiff-necked any longer. And then, what's it say in verse 17? And then verse 18.
He administers justice to the fatherless and widows, loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing, therefore love the stranger. It doesn't say anything about his wrath.
His wrath? Right. Yeah, but here, in a sense, it's showing his compassionate side, except he's not using the word compassion. These are acts of compassion to the weak, to the ones in society who are vulnerable, orphans, widows, foreigners that don't have rights in, you know, the country they're living in. And so it's interesting. We're going to come back to this later on. Go to Deuteronomy 11, and we'll just finish off here. As Sheila brought up, this is kind of a summary of what's happened with they fled Egypt. And by the way, he said the reason why you need to be compassionate or take care of the foreigner is because you used to be a foreigner, which is also the same thing that Deuteronomy 5 says about the Ten Commandments when it says for you to keep the Sabbath, your slaves should also have a Sabbath because you were slaves in Egypt. And anyways, it's interesting. There's this type of... humility position of you're no better, you know, you're flesh and blood, looks like everyone else.
These aliens are probably not believing whatever we battle with this in Europe. The Muslims are coming in.
Yeah.
Do we love them? Do we be kind to them? Or should they go back to their country and all love it? That's the way to quote that verse, you know. Or to show love.
Yeah, it's right here.
There could be unbelievers and
there it is. And so this is it. This is our first section this morning. Now I want to go to 1 Kings 8.
Can I just ask a question?
Yep.
Because in verse 10:2 it says, and I will write on the tablets the words that are on the first tablet. Somewhere it says God writes with the finger of God.
Right.
I've always heard there's some discussion about the second round, whether Moses did it or whether God does it. And here it very clearly says God does it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know about that besides what you just said.
Well,
but it seems that Moses cuts out the tablets and God's the one who writes in them.
Because it actually uses the expression finger of God, doesn't it, somewhere?
Yes.
Can't remember where.
Which is usually a sign of
So let's go to 1 Kings 8, and I'm going to read, and I'm going to start in verse 1 of chapter 8, 1 Kings chapter 8. Then King Solomon summoned into his presence at Jerusalem the elders of Israel, all the heads of the tribes and the chiefs of the Israelite families, to bring up the Ark of the Lord's covenant from Zion, the city of David. All the Israelites came together. Okay, let's go to verse 6. Then the priest brought the Ark of the Lord's covenant to its place in the inner sanctuary of the temple, the most holy place. He put it beneath the wings of the cherubim. The cherubim spread their wings over the place of the ark and overshadowed the ark and its carrying poles. These poles were so long that their ends could be seen from the holy place in front of the inner sanctuary, but not from outside of the holy place. Okay, verse 9. And that is the verse that we were given with this section here and following. There was nothing in the ark except the two stone tablets that Moses had placed in it at Horeb, where the Lord made a covenant with the Israelites after they came out of Egypt. So, if you were to take this verse, we're going to keep reading, but if you were to take this verse and compare it to what we just read here in Deuteronomy 10, what matches up?
Well, first of all, Horeb. Secondly, the two tablets of stone.
Okay, so two stone tablets. What does the King's passage emphasize? That verse.
The covenant. When they came out of the land of Egypt, I mean.
It says there's nothing in the ark.
Oh, nothing in the ark except these.
Except those two stone tablets.
Yeah.
And what does Deuteronomy 10 say? Put these stone tablets in the ark. Right?
Right.
And so then Kings is emphasizing there's nothing in the ark
except
the two stone tablets.
And did it stay that way, only those tablets, all the time, or was something else put in the ark?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Well, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's all of a sudden like feeling like something's not right here.
At that point,
people are thinking, "Oh, there's a staff, and there's a jar of manna. What else?
That's it.
Why do we think this? It has to be blossomed, by the way. Okay, here's a jar. This is a jar. Wait, that's not a jar. Let's see. Okay, this is a jar of manna. Okay, why are we thinking this? What? So why are we thinking that there's this stuff?
Well, because there's two. The ark is the central holy of holies, if you like, with just the two stone tablets.
Yeah.
And the tabernacle is a whole construction with a whole bunch of stuff outside.
At the end of the manna.
But I'm still asking, why do you think there's other things in there? What? Why?
Because
it's written somewhere. Good. Okay.
Where's the first? Aaron placed it before the testimony for safekeeping.
Okay.
Exodus 16:33.
This is what?
The manna. Take a jar and put it in it an oatmeal full of manna and place it before the Lord to be kept for generations to come.
First off, the Ark of the Covenant is Aron HaBrit, and you know, Aron in modern Hebrew is this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, the closet of the covenant. It's the chest of the covenant. We have this word Ark. It comes from like English.
Ark is the old English word for chest.
Okay, so it's the old English word for chest, and now we've
just like a box chest.
We inherited it probably from King James. Ark, maybe. So, but, so you have Aron, HaBrit, and you also, in other parts, you have Aron, HaEdut. And Edut is testimony. So that's what Sharon just read. You want to read that again, Sharon?
Okay, Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put in it an omer full of manna and place it before the Lord to be kept for generations to come. Just as the Lord commanded
that?
That was Exodus 16, 3, 3, 3, 4.
It just says,
I don't have 33 in my chapter.
It just says the testimony, not the law.
Yeah, yeah, and do it, and do it. It's just testimony. Okay, look at Exodus 25. This gives it specifically, Ark of the Testimony.
It's Ark HaBrit. Why did I think you said Ark Edut?
Because we did say, we said both.
Oh,
okay.
But the question is, it says, Lifnei HaEdut.
Yeah, that's
right. Write it in Hebrew for me. I can never find
it. So it doesn't mean inside the Edut, you can put it in front of.
Okay, hold on. They're like stealing all the fun now. Okay. So did somebody read Exodus 25? No. I want 25:16 maybe. Okay, so first off, you're put in the ark the testimony I have to give to you. So you can infer that this is these two stone tablets. I mean, there's more scripture than just this verse. But anyways, keep reading.
You are to make an atonement with pure gold. Its length is to be 3 feet 9 inches, and its width to be 2 feet 3 inches.
Keep going. Exodus 25. There you go. Okay, so.
And so the Ark of the Testimony was verse 10.
Exodus 25.
I got chest and then Ark of the Testimony.
16 to 22. Okay, so if you go to Exodus 26, next chapter, it says in verse 33.
You shall hang the veil from the clasp, then you shall bring the Ark of the Testimony in there behind the veil. The veil should be a divider for you between the holy place and the most holy. You shall put the mercy seat upon the Ark of the Testimony in the most holy. You shall set the table outside the veil, and the lampstand across from the table on the side of the tabernacle.
Okay, sorry. I just want to emphasize there. The English doesn't have it, because it's saying Ark of the Covenant. Is that what it's saying?
I've got the veil should be, was it the Ark of the Testimony I have here?
Okay, so Ark of the Testimony. Ark of the Testimony is what I'm trying to point out here. Ark of the Testimony is Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Covenant, testimony.
It's the same word.
It's the same thing.
Concept.
It's what?
Same concept.
It's this thing right here, this box, right?
But is it not trying to emphasize contrast or?
Well, Exodus likes to use the word edut. I mean, it also uses. It likes to use testimony, and it's maybe an older term that was used for the ark.
Think about it. What's it a testimony for?
Well, oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
So they're both kind of referring to the covenant.
The word brit, right, is covenant, and edut is testimony. And like Sharon was saying, a covenant and a testimony is.
It's also linked with witness, isn't it? I mean,
that's what I'm saying. You have witnesses when you make a covenant. There are witnesses.
Were you going to say
the covenant document actually reminds you of the covenant you made.
Right.
There were witnesses there. So
right.
That's
like having a marriage license.
Yeah, it's a witness to what happened.
Right.
Yeah, just they definitely mean something. The two words don't mean the same thing. It's just they refer to the same thing.
They're synonyms.
So I can say man and human, both talking about Gary, they mean something different.
Good.
They're synonyms.
They're referring to
yeah.
In this case, they're both referring to the same event of cutting a covenant with God.
Okay. Because we don't have a ton of time, that all to say, we're dealing with the same concept here. Sharon just read from Exodus 16 about the manna, right? We all know the story of the manna. The manna is this miracle, and then God commands the people. Sharon, you read it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take some of the manna. put it in a jar, right? And put it lifne ha'edut, before the testimony. Yeah, but then keep reading.
What passage?
Exodus 16.
Yeah.
So, everybody got that? Exodus.
It says before the Lord, verse 33.
Yeah.
And then verse 44 specifies the name of the
food. Okay, so Exodus 16.
Too much on Friday or whatever. Here we're saying you pick it up and you store it as a sort of.
Yeah.
So
it's all about obedience. The obedience is what kept them well.
Here, Jesus says, put it where you can see it.
But what I want to emphasize is that it says before. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we all know languages can mean different things and all this, but I'm just going to take it for what its general meaning is, as when we talked in English before.
In front of.
Yeah, in front of. Now, the next thing that you all brought up from your classical memory of Sunday school is that the ark had this rod of staff of Aaron. Where does that come from? Right, the blossom of the almond. Where is it? Number 17. Go to number 17. Remember, there's a rebellion, and Korach, and I'm just going to skip to verse 8. The next day, Moses entered the tent, and he saw that Aaron's staff, which represented the tribe of Levi, not only had sprouted, but had budded and blossomed and produced almonds. Then Moses brought out all the staffs from the Lord's presence to all the Israelites, and they looked at them, and each of the leaders took his own staff. The Lord said to Moses, verse 10, put back Aaron's staff. Where?
In front of
the Ark of the Covenant. So it's Lifnei again.
Which chapter?
This is number 17, verse 10.
Okay, sorry. Thank you.
Sure. This will put an end to their grumbling against me. Okay.
So
as far as I know,
Sunday school was wrong.
Well, we're going to talk about Sunday school in a second, but let's put the staff here, and there's the manna, and it says before. And so, as far as I know, this is the last we ever hear of Aaron's rod, and this manna.
So it never says it was in the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay, so where we come to is Hebrews. Go to the book of Hebrews, chapter 9. This is where we're getting our memory from. And here we have to talk about Greek a little bit. Hebrews chapter 9. Let's just start at the beginning just to get the context. Now, the first covenant had regulations for worship and also an earthly sanctuary. A tabernacle was set up, and in its first room were the lampstand and a table with its consecrated bread. This was called the holy place. Behind the second curtain was a room called the most holy place, which had the golden altar of incense and the gold-covered ark of the covenant. Okay, here we are. And then here in the NIV it says, this ark contained the gold jar of manna, Aaron's staff that had budded, and the stone tablets of the covenant. Above the ark were the cherubim of the glory, overshadowing the atonement cover. But we cannot discuss these things in detail now.
So you're
going to
give us a timetable of when they were put in?
Here's the thing is, it was interesting. We did this Bible study years ago. during the week on the parasha. It was like 20 years ago, and we had an Orthodox Jewish guy who came to the Bible study, and we were reading through the passage regarding the ark, and it came out where it said it only had, it had the two tablets, and all the Christians in the room were like, well, no, it also had the staff.
But he was saying it was empty. He said the ark was completely empty, but no, it had the Ten Commandments. Where did you get that?
Right, so he had no clue, yeah. And then we read Hebrews 9, and he's like, you know, he was shocked, and we're all shocked, and we're all realizing that this is the only verse.
We went to different Sunday schools.
Well, we think, or Shabbat schools. And this is the only verse that has anything talking about this, as far as I know, from what I've looked into it in my short
research. You mean that holds it all together?
That says it's... I've read somewhere that some people are saying that the Greek doesn't necessarily say inside. It could also be... No. The word "in" is "in," but you're saying that that it's referring to the tabernacle, not to the ark. That they are in the tabernacle. Since you start in verse 1 and 2 and 3, it's talking about the earthly tabernacle. And so that's the argument that I've heard, that... You understand what we're saying? Like, are we referring to are these inside this tabernacle, or are they inside of the ark, based off of how it's written out?
And who wrote Hebrews?
No one knows.
And how long had the ark been lost before this was written?
Okay, so this is kind of where I want to end today. I want to end.
What?
So what do y'all think? It could be, right? Yeah.
A tabernacle is like a tent. I mean,
yes.
We were in Shiloh.
It is
a
tent.
Few years ago. It's a tent. And it can pick up and you can move it and you can walk around with it. Now, within this construct, this tent, I mean, it's pretty ornate tent. It seems to me there is the Ark, the Holy of Holies, or whatever you want to call it. And it's, I think, in Hebrews, I mean, having not been to Sunday school and had all these amazing lessons you've had, it seems to me it says there's a tabernacle was prepared, the first part of which was the lampstand, the table, the showbread, and so on. And behind there's a second veil, the part of the tabernacle is called the Holy of Holies. And that seems to me is be the Ark where the Ten Commandments are, no?
Yeah,
it's a two-part thing, and if you go to, I've never been, but isn't there a whole reconstruction done somewhere near that?
Yeah.
Which is quite impressive, yeah.
Can I say something about the Greek? I actually think it's probably pretty strongly referring to the chest. The reason is verse 5, which is above which, so the altes is referring back to something, and that can't be the skin name. That can't be the chest.
Right,
it's
way too far back.
Right. Not what, it's also just not true. Right? The cherubim are above something, and that's above the ark. Mm-hmm. And that pronoun is referring back to the ark. So most likely, it seems like that pronoun is referring to the same thing that the previous pronoun is referring to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I that's how I would agree.
So all I'm trying to say is this, if that's the case, if we, you know, we want to kind of go with like what most Bible translations have, that it is understood that they are inside the ark. This is all of this rests on this verse from Hebrews 9, verse 4. Because let's go through, because what we just saw in the Hebrew is that the Hebrew said the staff and the manna were before the ark. And we just read in 1 Kings 8:9 that only the two tablets are in the ark. So what's happened? What is the history of the ark?
They got tired of carrying it around.
So there's all kinds of theories. There's all kinds of theories.
It sits in Shiloh for so long, and then the Philistines carry it off, and then it goes X
well,
and Y.
Well, you want to make sure it always stays before God's presence, so to keep it inside, you know, when it moves place to place, it's just easy.
Sure.
So there's no other... It's so nice. What does Josephus say about it?
Well, that's the thing, is I didn't actually realize that the last time we hear of the ark is with... Josiah, and that's in Chronicles.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is that I thought there was something special about the Second Temple.
There is no Ark of the Covenant in the Second Temple. Yeah, there's no... There's no Ark.
Titus Arch doesn't have an Ark.
Right.
And the Babylon, they detail all the exile.
So, let's summarize all of that history for people who don't know it all. Real quick. The Ark, where does the Ark dwell? In the tabernacle. No, before we get there, it's in the tabernacle and it's in the wilderness. And what's the whole story? Who made the ark?
Bezalel,
right? That's the street right here next to our church. He built the ark. Okay, that's in Exodus 37. Exodus.
Chief artist.
Who is chief?
Last week and this week's parish.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's very interesting that this week's parashah is connecting up with our triennial today.
Well, the Haftarah is the same day.
Yeah, the Haftarah. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. And then, where do we first see it appear in the land of Canaan coming out of the wilderness? Outside of the tabernacle is what I'm talking about.
Crossing the Yarden.
Yeah, the Jordan. When they cross Jordan... The priest, when their feet step into the river, what happens?
Trips.
The water stops, and they all cross over.
So where does he trip?
Oh, that's David.
Yeah. And then what is the ark? What is the ark? What is the ark
there too?
Wait, sure. Quickly, where does the ark go from the Jordan River?
Around Jericho,
right? And the walls come tumbling down. There's some power in this ark, right? I mean, you could say it's God, but you could also say that people, because the ark is supposed to represent where God sits.
Supernatural power, yes.
Right, on the lid, right?
No, it's the trumpets.
Right. Well, the trumpets are a part of it. And then Shiloh is the next time that we hear about it. Shiloh. And... How did it get there?
Joshua took it up.
No, we have no idea. All we know is we read Samuel, and it says at that time the tabernacle was there and the ark was there.
It starts in Joshua and Judges, doesn't it?
It just has Jericho.
He's just saying it doesn't tell us specifically in the text all the process of how it got there.
And we don't even know why Shiloh was picked, right?
It's a high place.
Of course, I mean, but there's lots of high places. Yeah. Why that high place?
And so the highest either.
It's interesting.
As far as mountains are really Jerusalem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's actually down in a bit.
So this is where the whole thing happens. What's the whole story of the ark? It becomes like the main character here at this point.
With the Philistines.
The sons of Eli take it into battle because, like, if we have this, we're going to beat the Philistines. Maybe you think back to Jericho, right? Same thing. It was used as a war type of amulet or whatever you want to call it. And it didn't work. The Philistines take it. And where did
they use it like magic?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Where did they end up taking it, the Philistines?
Ashdod.
And so Ashdod, there's a temple to Dagon there. And we all know the story. Falling down, the Philistines are getting these hemorrhoids or tumors or... Something that they're like, get this thing out of here.
I never know what those tumors are.
Yeah, no one does. So, but and from there it goes to Ekron.
It is the word we use for hemorrhoids today.
And then from Ekron, it goes where?
Bet Shemesh.
And then more people die. And then from Bet Shemesh, it goes to Abulosh, which the Bible is called Kiryat Yarim. How long is it there?
20 years.
20 years.
And
then David danced.
And then David brings it from Kiryat Yearim up to Jerusalem.
But there's actually, when they get to Beit Shemesh, there's rejoicing.
Okay,
Before it gets stuck, I mean, when it comes, it has all these nasty effects for the Philistines.
Okay, good question. So the Philistines, when they send it back on the cart with the mooing cows, they also put another chest beside it with gold and things like this. And so that's important to remember, because later on we're going to come to that in a later interpretation about what happened to the ark.
That's where the jar becomes gold.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
What did he say?
Gold.
The jar becomes gold.
The manna pot was gold.
All right.
Yeah.
Philistine.
Yeah. So it comes back, Beit Shemesh, Abu Ghosh, and then it comes to Jerusalem with David. And how long? It stays there in Jerusalem until when? Till the temple is built. Solomon builds a temple, and we just read here in 1 Kings 8 that he's now bringing this ark into the temple. And
what year are we talking about?
3,000 years ago?
3,000 years.
Something like that.
It's a great expansion.
Yeah. Simple.
Okay.
Each time there is a sign that this, the ark, which is the presence of God, has a, let's call it, supernatural power. Something happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. But the interesting thing you didn't say, having just been to Shiloh, is it sat there for nearly 300 years, or just over 300 years or something, and the people were very mixed. And
what do you mean, mixed in what way?
Mixed in terms of their faithfulness. This is the place for worship. This is where they're supposed to come to worship. They're supposed to come up three times a year to Shiloh to worship the Lord, it says. But then they end up going after other gods and not trusting the Lord, and you know, it's, and there was no king in Israel, so everybody did what was right in their own.
Okay, so one theory, we just kind of went through this whole period, is the Philistines took out the manna and they took out the staff. But it doesn't sound very right, because they were getting cursed and all these hemorrhoids. They probably would have sent everything back just like it was. But anyway, someone's said that.
Unless the person who took it out and died, and then... But it doesn't sound like it was ever in it. If it was just placed before it.
Right.
Then, you know, then it should still be in Shiloh. Right?
That's the problem. Well, they would have come together.
Why? Not because it's being stolen necessarily.
You have to miss it before it.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because how do you ensure that these things are always before it? If you're moving, you almost have to put it inside to make sure.
If they stole it, they might not recognize it as something.
Here's what's interesting, though, about the Hebrews 9 passage. I've always thought of Hebrews 9 as talking about, and this is going to sound really stupid, but talking about the temple. Even though Hebrews 9 says this is the tabernacle, he's talking about the tabernacle. And we know the tabernacle does not exist past the temple. Like, maybe it was set up inside, there's all this talk of, you know, but you know, tabernacle also disappears. Once the temple's in town, that's the new game.
That's right.
And so Hebrews 9 is specifically talking about a time that's thousands of years, I mean, you know, 2,000 years before, or 1,500 years from the second temple period. Are you going to say something? Okay. And so if Hebrews 9 is referring to, he's talking about these things were there in the tabernacle or in the ark or whatever, he's not talking about his time period about the temple, he's talking about the tabernacle. So that's also something to think about in the context of this whole thing. But let's talk about the ark, because everybody loves the ark, right? Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we're going to get Indiana Jones. Where did Indiana Jones find the Lost Ark? Let's just get to the bottom line. Does anybody remember?
In Egypt.
Why did he find it in Egypt? How does it relate to the Bible?
Presumably because what's her name? The Queen of Sheba took it off.
Okay, so Solomon has a son. His son's name is
Rehoboam.
And he's not so good, right? Because there's a civil war, and 10 of the tribes leave him. And so he's not a good ruler. And what happens during his reign? It's in 1 Kings 14 and 2 Chronicles 12. He gets invaded by the Egyptian pharaoh, Shishak. Y'all remember that story?
Presumably, that's not the same one who married his daughter to him?
Well, you mean Solomon married an Egyptian. Right.
Princess.
Right. No, no. Well,
that guy wouldn't have attacked him, would he?
But this is 1 Kings 14. He comes in. Anybody there? First.
Yeah, I'm there.
25 maybe?
It happened in the fifth year of King Rehoboam that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem, and he took away the treasures of the house of the Lord or the treasures of the king's house. He took away everything. He also took away all the gold shields which Solomon had made.
So, what's interesting here, I think this is where the premise from the Raiders of the Lost Ark comes from what I've heard, is that's why it's, you know, it's buried in Egypt, and then they got to run away from the Nazis and all that stuff. But it says here, Shishak took the treasures of the temple. It doesn't talk about literally taking the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant. But it's interesting because he takes the gold shields, and then Rehoboam has to make bronze shields. So already within, you know, 10, 20, 30 years of this great, magnificent temple, it's already gone from gold metal, not even to silver metal, but to bronze metal. It's, you know, it's already being lowered. It's the quality of degraded.
And if the Ark of the Covenant is covered with gold, of course it would be
a war prize.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the center of
the gold
seatbelt.
So it's interesting. You know, maybe Indiana Jones knew something.
Right.
but later on, the big story that we know in the Bible is the Babylonians, and that comes 350 years later, and we all know that the Babylonians destroy the temple. They don't just rob it and pillage it. And by the way, it's not even before that when Sennacherib, you know, surrounds Jerusalem, and he doesn't actually conquer Jerusalem. At the end of the day, it does talk about Hezekiah paying Sennacherib off with gold and things, I think, related to the temple. I don't have the reference right now. But, so, if you read the whole Chronicles...
The whole Daniel story, and there, haven't they given all the gold from the temple, the gold vessels?
From Daniel.
Daniel.
Yeah, that's the Babylonians.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm saying, even before the Babylonians, and there's Shishak right here, and the Babylonians... if you read through all the annals of the kings, at different times they get weak, and they're paying off these foreign kings with stuff that is related to the temple, because that's where your precious stuff is. So, all that to say, to bring it down to the Babylonians, because that's the most famous one, and that the last mention of the ark was in Josiah's day, that's in 2 Chronicles 35:3. You can... put this one in your memory verse. For those who love art, this is the last mention of it as far as it existing in a particular place. And so it says that he has the ark brought back into the temple. And so what's implied from that is what?
It wasn't in the temple.
And we know Josiah, he comes, his grandfather is who? I think I got this right. Manasseh. Who's the longest king to ever reign in Judah?
Manasseh.
And who is Manasseh?
He's a baddie.
He's not just a baddie, he's like evil. You read through the whole list of everything he did, it was terrible. He's basically a pagan. And so there's, you know, so maybe the priest took the ark out and hid it away during Manasseh's reign. Mm-hmm. You can speculate. And so Josiah here might be bringing it back in. Who knows?
That's way after Rehoboam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 300 years.
Yes, I mean, he would have got them coming.
I mean, this is assuming the ark wasn't taken, right? That's what I'm putting it. Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. That if Josiah has an ark, then it wasn't taken by Rehoboam.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So maybe Indiana Jones doesn't have it right. Okay, so here's where things get a little interesting. In Second Maccabees, which is in the Apocrypha, it's a book that's in the Catholic Bible, and it's a Jewish book, and it's from before the time of Jesus. It talks about that Jeremiah took the ark before the Babylonians came and hid it away. And it says that he took and hid it on the mount where Moses looked over into the land. So this is.
I guess he and a bunch of Levites. Nebo. Before they died.
What?
I said he and a bunch of Levites.
Sure. Right. So this is one thing. Like, what happened? Where did it go? Because you don't hear the Babylonians taking it away. You know the Babylonians take away stuff from the temple, just like it says about Shishak taking stuff away from the temple. It doesn't say, and he took the Ark of the Covenant. So,
and it does mention the men of God and stuff, right? The Babylonians?
I don't know exactly. You could double check that. Mm-hmm. So one theory is that it went, and it's hidden somewhere in Jordan today, Mount Nebo. Another one is that it might have been taken down to Egypt by Jeremiah as well, because we all know Jeremiah went to Egypt.
Right.
So then you have the whole, okay.
Indiana Jones again.
And you come back to Indiana Jones again.
I think it's time I improve my Bible knowledge for Indiana Jones. I've never seen that, and I've never read all the Bible.
Okay, so then if you... What's the Temple Institute? What's their official, you go to their website?
Yeah.
Where is the Ark of the Covenant? David?
Underneath, there was a few years ago when it caused troubles, and the mayor shut it up and said, don't cause troubles, it might be there.
Right, yeah. So this is a big one that, sorry?
Where is that?
The Temple Mount. According to the Temple Institute, that...
Just north of the dome.
So in terms of where we've got possibilities, it's either in Egypt. Why did I think it
Jordan.
Was
Jordan?
Why did I in Jordan as well? As
right, Mount Nebo. Mount Nebo. That's according to Second Maccabees. According to some rabbinic midrashic tradition, it's in the Temple Mount in a hidden cavern that Josiah, before the destruction with the Babylonians, right, would have hid it.
What about Ethiopia? I always thought it's
okay,
Ethiopia.
And then Ethiopia. What's the story there?
The Queen of Sheba.
Is it the Queen of Sheba?
Right. So the idea... there's
they really believe it, and they've got a whole... So I know Ethiopian people who go non-Ethiopian.
Ethiopian Christian tradition.
There's a tradition that...
I mean, they've got a whole sort of church establishment there for it.
It goes back about 1,000 years, the tradition in Ethiopia, and to connect the king in Ethiopia to the Solomonic dynasty, and that the Ark of the Covenant was brought there and by Menelik.
Oh, that's right.
And that the forgery was left in the temple. So that's how they were able to... Yeah. Okay, I think these are the major theories. But the bottom line is this, that, okay, and so one, the Tosefta, the rabbinic writing that talks about Josiah hiding the ark, and it says that he took the ark and he hid it with the jar of manna, with a jar of anointing oil, the rod of Aaron, which budded, and the chest that the Philistines gave.
Josiah or Jeremiah?
Josiah. This is in Tosefta.
Now, what was in the ark?
So right, it doesn't say it was in it. It's just that all of it together.
Yeah. Josiah hid it so it wouldn't be captured.
Right. And then, like, there's, but, you know.
So it's tied into the underneath the Temple Mount.
Yeah, right. Now, everybody who studied rabbinic tradition know that Jews have different opinions. They say something like, if you have two Jews in the room, you have three opinions.
So we disagree with that.
Or two rabbis or whatever, right? And so there's a Rabbi Eliezer and a Rabbi Shimon who say the Ark was taken captive to Babylon. So that's also in the Talmud. So they weren't in agreement either. And so I think these are your major kind of traditions that regard to where the ark is. And so what I have to admit that I didn't know is that everybody basically agreed there was no ark when Jesus was here at the temple, when Paul was here. The Holy of Holies sat empty, and they didn't like reproduce it. They didn't. It just there was no ark. And so
I mean, that's debated, but
right.
Well, that if it spread out, so it wasn't concentrated anymore with an ark, and it spread out to the whole temple.
So Jesus was the presence of God.
Right.
Yeah, right, right.
Jesus said, my Father is there.
You don't have that same verse. You have a verse that says, in Exodus, right, the presence of God filled the...
Are you talking about Ezra? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, talk about Ezra, right? You don't have an equivalent verse in Ezra.
With the smoke and the...
You don't have the presence of God falling.
Right. Right? Yeah.
So, and if you don't have the ark, too, it's like...
It's just a chair. Maybe you just stay standing.
As Sharon pointed out earlier, when Titus destroyed the temple in Jerusalem in 70, and they built the Arch of Titus in Rome today, you can go see it, and they're carrying all the things out from the temple back to Rome. They have the menorah, they have, there's a couple other things, but you don't see a picture of an ark. So that's also interesting. Because for sure that would be on the arch of Titus. That would be the thing.
That's the biggest trophy.
And it's pretty cool. I was just there at the arch of Titus. I mean, it's
significant.
The reproduction of the menorah is an amazingly accurate reproduction
of
what.
The foot, the feet.
Oh, right. The
but spread. Maybe that could have been a built cover. Like they have more of a thing like that.
For anybody who can't get to Rome, you can go and see the Megillata Edge, and they've got a very good.
You also, I just went to the Tower of David Museum, and they have a replica of the same thing.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
But what I was thinking was that, I mean, the whole issue of God tabernacling with men, and you've got the whole thing which you talk about, that the glory of the Lord comes down, they couldn't even stand. And the whole thing today's parasha downstairs is about. Moses was couldn't even go into the tabernacle because of the presence of the Lord. And then, if we read scripture in a sort of, if you like it as a historical narrative of what happens, you end up with Yeshua, who is the Lamb who was slain before the foundation of the world, and he tabernacles with us. This is what John 1:10 says, okay? And the whole thing about this is the presence of the Lord. So, the interesting thing is that the second temple, the rebuilt second temple, was never a sort of God-inspired, ordained one. You don't get the whole thing. All we know is that Herod built it to really keep kosher with the Jews who were around him and hope that everybody would be okay. But it becomes a balagan, and the Lord goes in and destroys them.
But it's interesting that the metaphor used for the community of believers is a temple and not a tabernacle.
So
the metaphor used for believers is a temple. Stones, we're all stones, not a tabernacle. It's interesting.
So we've run out of time, but I want to hit two final verses just to kind of close this all together. Sharon just mentioned in Ezekiel, we all know Ezekiel has this vision of all these wheels. You know, Ezekiel saw the wheels. And what do those wheels represent? They represent God's presence, okay? Because it's talking about the cherubim, you know, and they got the wings and the four faces and all this stuff. And Sharon just mentioned in like Ezekiel 10 talks about basically in verse 10:9. I looked and I saw beside the cherubim four wheels, one beside each of the cherubim. The wheels sparkled like topaz. And as they... goes in and describes everything that we know about the faces. Verse 15, then the cherubim rose upward. These were the living creatures that I had seen. Verse 18. Then the glory of the Lord departed from over the threshold of the temple and stopped above the cherubim. And while I watched, the cherubim spread their wings and rose from the ground. And as they went, the wheels went with them. And they stopped at the entrance of the east gate of the Lord's house. And the glory of the God of Israel was above them. And so you have this image of God getting on his hot rod and leaving the temple. These four wheels, he's got a moving vehicle, a chariot, whatever you want to call it, and he's going out of the temple, and he's leaving it, just kind of like what Kevin mentioned, that you have this smoke, and you have this, just like when God came and settled in Solomon's temple, the presence, it's the same image except reverse. God's leaving the temple. And this is supposed to be before the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians. Because we know Ezekiel's in Babylon. He was taken exile before the destruction, but he's having these visions about what is coming to pass. And if you go to Capernaum, at their synagogue, they have these findings there of this thing. It's kind of carved in stone, and you see these two wheels.
Oh, right, I've seen it.
And it looks like a car, but it's supposed to be the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant on wheels. And that's what most people think. And
about most people think that's what Ezekiel's thinking about? Or what?
Well, obviously, it's got to come from Ezekiel. Because where were the...
Yeah.
Right.
The next verse is about the East Gate, and interesting, the riots at the East Gate this week.
Right.
What's
yeah. There. And so, since Jeremiah has been kind of an important person in our discussion this morning, and he's actually been a big person. We always think of Elijah and Moses as very important people in Jewish tradition, especially like in the end times or the last days type of thing. But Jeremiah also plays a part in Jewish tradition as well, because he's got to bring back the ark. You know, you got to, because he hid it somewhere, and got to bring it back for the Messiah. And, you know, when Jesus said, "Who do men say that I am?" He said to his disciples, and one of the Gospels, they say you're Jeremiah. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Not just, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jeremiah is a pretty powerful individual in his own right. But I want to end in chapter 3 this morning.
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, you know, is the prophet who's here as the whole house is burning down. Well, not literally, because he's actually... Well, actually, no. He goes to Egypt after the destruction. But he's in the cistern, that hole in the ground. He's in darkness, but he's still faithful to what the Lord's given him to say to the people. And in verse 14 of chapter 3... "Return, faithless people, declares the Lord, for I am your husband. I will choose you, one from a town and two from a clan, and bring you to Zion. Then I will give you shepherds after my own heart, who will lead you with knowledge and understanding. In those days, when your numbers have increased greatly in the land, declares the Lord, people will no longer say, 'The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord.' It will never enter their minds or be remembered. It will not be missed, nor will another one be made. At that time, they will call Jerusalem the throne of the Lord, and all nations will gather in Jerusalem to honor the name of the Lord." No, oh, here's our connection with our Deuteronomy passage this morning.
Wait, what verse is
it? Jeremiah 3.
Starting in 14.
14.
Yeah. But here's our connection to Deuteronomy this morning. No longer will they follow the stubbornness of their evil hearts. Remember this morning we read that about the stubborn, circumcise your hearts, and don't be a stiff-necked people.
It's really interesting because there are people around who get really upset with all the sort of looking for the ark, you know, buried here, buried there, even somewhere else, because of this verse. The ark of the covenant of the Lord, it will not come to mind, nor shall they remember it, nor shall they visit it, nor shall it be made anymore. So it's gone.
Jesus too kind of talks about, like, this is my Father's house, and you should have known that I'm going to be here and all that stuff. But then he also says it's going to be
destroy.
It's going to be destroyed. It's kind of not ambivalent.
I love your phrase, which you've used, Danny, in the past, which is the whole, what's the word that you use, about the way Scripture develops in it. You have a phrase.
Well, progressive revelation.
Maybe, it's progressive revelation. Yeah, I love it.
But I love it, because
I think that's what Scripture does. If we get stuck with...
But what's the progression here in Jeremiah 3? The progression is, what do we...